Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
From theblogulator.com.
This is Blogulator Radio.
Skewering and fawning over all things television on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network.
And my name's Chris.
And I'm Jerxica.
And our opinions are valid. So Jerxica, it's been a while since I've talked to you here on Blogulator Radio.
Or ever.
Ever, yeah.
We're just strangers living in the same house.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago... last time it was my turn to host an episode, I invited Sean, our buddy from Milwaukee, our cartoonist for theblogulator.com, to discuss The Walking Dead with me, since you chose to abstain from watching said television program.
Because I have taste.
Oh!
Just saying. Sorry, Sean.
And we had a good discussion, but honestly, I think I have to admit, I missed watching sitcoms and reality television.
Yay!
So we got back
That's what
to
I mean
that.
By taste. Sitcoms and reality television.
We got back to that pretty hardcore. And we also, speaking of actual taste, the new season, season 5 of Mad Men, started this week.
Which is awesome. Yes. Just a question, though. How do you get back into reality programming and or sitcoms hardcore?
By basically watching it every day.
Yeah.
Every
day. It was like a Clockwork Orange style experience.
Eyelids popped open.
Yep. I know. I still have toothpick marks in my brow.
But before we get into the stuff that just concerns you and I'm very excited to tell...
it's a big announcement.
I'm not sure what you're thinking. Oh. I'm going to say that I got you to somehow watch the last 10 minutes of The Walking Dead season finale.
That's a big announcement.
Okay, that's what you're thinking. Because we actually have another actual big announcement, which we should, sprinkle throughout the show. And
with annoying foreshadowing. So that it will inevitably not meet your high expectations.
Yes. Theblogulator.com is excited to relaunch our blog version of the website. In 2 weeks' time, on April 9th, that's a Monday, we're excited. We're going to bring in a couple new bloggers, including Jerxica, who has never written anything for the blog, mostly because she barely knows how to write.
Mostly, yeah.
We've been teaching her.
And getting tutored.
She's going to keep us up to date on some of those sitcoms and or reality shows. Mm-hmm. And we have also got a couple Twitter friends that were pleased to join us, but more details to follow. Both here at our Blogulator radio section on FancyPantsGangsters.com, as well as TheBlogulator.com, as well as Twitter. Follow at TheBlogulator.
I did learn writing mostly through lolcats. So.
Right, so that'll be good, especially because you're going to be on Twitter now, too, for reals. You've had a Twitter handle.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Kind of been about... Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to TV. So we've got a lot of things to talk about this week, since it's going to be kind of a poopery, if you will, as you so daringly described it earlier.
A poopery.
We've got to talk about The Walking Dead briefly. We've got to talk about the return of Mad Men. We've got to talk about reality shows that we've been watching, such as The Voice and Fashion Star, as well as the return of some sitcoms that we've been enjoying, like Community, Cougar Town, maybe a couple others.
Mm-hmm. I like you say we have to.
We have to.
It's a compulsion.
This is what we're sticking to.
Mm-hmm.
All right. First, let's discuss Walking Dead to just wrap up that conversation. Get your favorite subject out of the way.
No,
first.
I'm just doing a Walker impression.
Good job.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I can explain to the listeners how exciting it was for me to claim victory over getting you to watch the last 10 minutes.
I don't think you can claim victory when your 9-month pregnant wife is just looking for a place to collapse for 5 minutes, and the only place available is next to you while you're watching The Walking Dead.
Okay, that is a completely untrue statement, first of all. We recently bought a house in which there's upwards of 4 other rooms that you could have collapsed in. And
true.
And you chose the room with The Walking Dead on TV.
Well, I like the chaise lounge.
You just prefer that chair.
Yeah.
Okay, the truth comes out.
Yeah.
What did you think seeing a few minutes of AMC's zombie show for the first time ever?
It was very confusing. I feel like if you're going to have a zombie show, Like, that's all you do is zombies, right? Like, that's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
They could invest a little bit more time and resources into making the zombies look believable.
No, but here's the thing is, you happen to see, like, one zombie death out of, like, 1,000 on the show that just happen to have crappy special effects for some reason. Usually the effects are really good on the show.
Yeah, well, I'm like an auditor, right? I'm auditing The Walking Dead.
You gotta make sure.
And that was our, you know, Qualler as a CPA would appreciate this.
You gotta have 100% consistency.
This was, you know, the sample that I reviewed. Not impressed by the effects.
Yeah.
Also, zombies move way too slowly for it to be like a really difficult situation to get out of. Like, you're running from someone who's like not only walking, but walking really like slowly, but somewhat blind.
Just, you're never running from just one of them. There's hordes. They gather in packs, and
it still didn't look that tricky to me.
I don't suspend your disbelief, man. Whatever your last name is.
Yeah. I also was a little, like, meh about the cast of characters that are...
Like, you were able to catch on pretty quickly, team. Like, what stereotype each person was.
Yeah, it was, like, I don't know.
I was impressed by that. You were very surprised that, quote-unquote, the black guy was still alive.
Yeah, right? I mean, good him. Good for him.
Yeah.
The old guy, it's like, come on, really?
Herschel, yes.
Yeah, why is the old guy gonna survive?
Well, that's...
He beats out everybody else? The man's like 80.
He's been holed up in this farm for the awfulness that is season 2. And
okay.
So the season finale is the first time he's ever away from the farm, except for the one time he went to go get a drink. Anyways.
He's probably the only one who has to worry about the speed of the walkers.
That's true.
Because they probably are faster than him.
Mm-hmm. So for listeners wondering where we've just left off now, that AMC's ended season 2 of Walking Dead... They have left the farm, which is an excellent development in that, in so much as we no longer have to see the farm anymore, which is a horrible setting. And you actually got to see, I think, one of the coolest parts of season 2 in this last episode, where we get the introduction of a new character that I think could possibly potentially save the show.
Oh, the Grim Reaper guy that's like...
But that's the thing. Spoiler alert, looked up the casting and... the person who's playing this hooded figure that carries two armless zombie slaves along with them is actually played by the actress who played the wife of the guy in the movie The Visitor.
It plays who? Wait, say it again?
So you remember the movie The Visitor?
Yes.
So the guy that gets deported in that movie?
Yeah.
His wife plays this hooded figure.
Oh, it's a lady.
Yes, it's a lady. Kind of expert samurai zombie killer.
Mm.
And she hooks up
I was going to jokingly suggest it was... it's Whitney from the sitcom Whitney.
Right.
But it is a lady, so...
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, so I think that could be very cool, especially because I remember she was really good in that movie, as were all the actors in that film. But she hooks up with Andrea. And Andrea has been a very problematic character, as I've talked with Sean about, where she... nobody knows exactly how to make her a strong...
Who's Andrea?
The woman that gets saved by the hooded figure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Blondie.
Because she can't outrun people walking 2 miles an hour.
But it's dark out, and she's exhausted. Okay,
My tummy hurts.
Anyways.
It's been a really stressful day.
I think the matching up of those two characters could potentially, like, make me reinvigorate my interest in the show. I liked that you decided you were going to perform the monologue by Rick from the season finale of season 2 of Walking Dead. In which he declares this group to no longer be a democracy.
Right, right. Actually, I'm going to say that to myself in the mirror every day when I go to work.
This is not a democracy anymore.
Yeah, just to fire myself up for the day.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I thought, as always, the dialogue is kind of hammy in that show, but I did like that it made Rick more than just the wishy-washy guy now that he's killed his best friend.
Of course his name's Rick, too.
His wife's also terrible. Lori, also a terrible name. But
they
she
really phoned in the names, huh?
They kind of did.
They put in like placeholders and then just were like, screw it.
TV critic Alan Sepinwall pointed this out, and it was probably my least favorite part of the finale as well, which is that 7 or so episodes ago, she was very much rooting for Rick to kill his best friend, Shane, and her former lover. But now that she's found out that Rick's killed him, she like recoils in horror. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, why is she suddenly changed just because she found, like, is it just too real for her now?
Chicks, man. Am I right?
Even though there's people dying left and right throughout this apocalypse. Anyways, the season ends with this zoom out of what looks to be like a bunker prison type setting that will presumably take the large portions of season three to come, which could make it more interesting. I hope that they don't just stay there the whole time like they did with the farm, because that just gets you kind of stuck in a rut. But
it does make for cheap production.
Right.
So.
Right. And a prison is at least more interesting than a farm, I think. Because you don't know who's there, and maybe there could be different factions of people, because it did look like a very large infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. If my opinion on a network were like a Hangman game...
Go on.
AMC would be very close to being hung.
Which we should also mention... probably part of that opinion stems from the fact that The Killing season 2 premieres next week.
Yeah. I'm not doing that again.
And I am, so you will be at some point joining me.
Dude.
I don't know why I am, other than out of sheer curiosity and masochism.
Yeah, it's what it is. It's pure masochism. Like, it's, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you know what?
You need to listen to some, like, Aretha Franklin... Convince yourself. Like, build your self-esteem back up, man. You don't need an AMC, all right? You're an independent man.
It's really sad that I just considered, just like thought of the comparison in my head, would I rather sit down and listen to Aretha Franklin or watch season 2 of The Killing? And I chose season 2 of The Killing.
Yeah, that's wrong. We gotta get you some therapy.
Yeah.
No, I'm just not doing that again. I poured my heart and my soul into... that series. I gave them an entire season of my attention, my devotion, my love. And what is it? How do they repay me for that?
With a dumb twist ending, not telling you who the killer is, and completely negating the one thing that was good about the show, which was Joel Kinnaman's character.
It's like, I don't know, fool me once, man. Not doing it again.
Well,
I am not a sucker.
I'm a sucker for two reasons. One, Vina Sood, the showrunner, has admitted that she's and promised that she is going to reveal the killer by the end of season 2. Second reason, this is for the longevity portion, because that is a lot of commitment just to get to an answer that you thought you were going to get a year ago.
Yeah.
But the second reason is that despite the screw rounds of the show, I mean, just because the season wrapped up in such a shoddily way written-wise, I still enjoy the mood of the show. I still enjoy the actors on the show. And I still enjoy the cinematography of the show.
Yeah.
And
I can see why that appeals to you more than me, though. Because you enjoy... Because
I like depressing crap.
No, you just enjoy, like, nothingness. Like,
I do. I could just... If it was just Mariel, or whatever her name is, Enos, sitting in a car while it's raining outside, looking contemplative, I would watch it.
It's like the... It's like a television drama version, like dialogue and everything, like equivalent of watching just like a nature scape.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a murder mystery, like if murder mystery was done by Discovery Channel.
Yes. That's a really good description. So.
And I like that.
But I'm not doing it again.
All right. Well, we'll see. We know how these things change. You did watch the last 10 minutes of The Walking Dead finale.
No, I'm just going to watch Twin Peaks on a constant loop.
All right.
Fair. That would watch be a real show.
That would be a fun experiment. What? To watch The Killing and Twin Peaks side by side. You watch one in one room, I'll watch one in the other, and we'll compare notes.
And my life.
You will undoubtedly enjoy living more than I would.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of AMC, it's probably the thing that is keeping you maybe on the border, hopefully.
Yeah, this is like the vowel. Like if you... On the Hangman game,
right.
When you guess the vowel, there's inevitably... It's the R-S-T-L-N-E,
right.
If you will.
It's that relief.
Right.
And we're talking about Mad Men.
Yes.
Season 5 premiered last night.
But they're still jerking us around, making us wait 17 months for it.
Right. That was way too long. And, I mean, I understand that, you know, big part of the reasons were the staff contract negotiations of last year, and also the fact that they didn't want to run it concurrently with The Walking Dead, because they're like their two cash cows, and they wanted to spread out that love throughout the year.
But it had been so long that I think both of us had kind of forgotten where the characters were at and like what had happened, and it made me think that if some of those like second rate like Mad Men-esque shows that the networks launched had taken off, that I wonder if Mad Men would have really lost audience when they finally came back, because people would have moved on to something else. I mean, luckily, the Playboy Club and Pan Am both totally sucked. And so I think that that helped. But if you think, like, what if one of those shows had taken off? Do you think that they would have lost some audience?
I honestly don't know if that was an option. I mean, I guess I haven't heard news about Pan Am. Obviously, Playboy Club was
right.
was famously canceled after 3 episodes. But Pan Am, we stuck around with longer. We didn't finish the season.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a teensy bit more interesting than Playboy Club, but it was overall still bland and not as incisive and not as subtly clever as Mad Men. But I honestly don't know if there was an option for like somebody to replicate the success, you know, with that kind of a show about that era, especially on network TV, because they're just so like, I mean, I was thinking about this as we were watching the premiere last night. It's such a uniquely, distinctive show in that it like definitely combines, dramatic elements that you would find in a traditional soap opera, or even like some of the things, especially last night, reminded me of like a teen drama where it's all about the relationships between the characters. And that's kind of what they try to do with both Playboy Club and Pan Am. But the big thing that they missed, and I don't know if anybody could ever do it besides somebody like Matthew Weiner, is that they successfully kind of implemented this element of social critiques, like almost like playwright David Mamet level dialogue, where it's double-edged and has ultimate unlimited layers of meaning, plus this kind of high budget cinematic style that Pan Am, I think, tried really hard to replicate in like a Spielbergian way. They tried to like make it very kind of like schmaltzy and over the top in that sense. But Mad Men's so good at like avoiding the saccharine in favor of you know, kind of existential questioning.
Well, they just misunderstood like what was successful about Mad Men.
Right. Because
it was like, you know, Mad Men's successful, so let's do another show where it's about the 60s. And let's do another show where we scratch the surface of, like, gender oppression.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And I mean, that's the thing in particular, I think it's been, like, talked to death about those kinds of shows in which they try to have their cake and eat it too by glorifying that time period, but also being like, oh, but weren't things wacky when people weren't nice to black people and women?
Well, and that's been a critique of Mad Men too. Like, Mad Men doesn't completely escape from, you know, getting trapped in some of that, which I think makes it especially difficult for some of the network shows to get past that. Because if Mad Men, which is generally a really thoughtful, kind of darker show, can't escape, you know, just some surface level.
Well, like,
you know,
I mean, I don't know if they're, I mean, I get that critique because it's kind of impossible to avoid that when you have a cast that is of main characters that is 100% white and still the majority of which are men. But the gender thing I think has especially been well handled over the past couple of seasons of Mad Men, especially in the season premiere. I feel like you could even argue that the female characters were more in the center than ever in that show, and I think they're doing a good job of escaping that trapping. And then also the race thing, that was interesting that they chose to open up on that scene of the other ad agency throwing paper bag water balloons at the African-American protesters outside, because it was almost like, and this is a true story I read today, is that that what happened in that scene, and also the line of the protesters coming up to that floor of the building and saying, "And you call us savages," was an actual like true quote from a newspaper article about an event like that from 1966. Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is even a show like Mad Men gets it wrong sometimes.
I don't, but what do you mean by gets it wrong?
Like, just it kind of hits the surface of those issues without generally exploring them. Like, I think they're finally getting to a point now, what is it, 5th season?
Mm-hmm.
Where they are exploring those issues more. But before it was like, you know what I'm saying? Like, or it would be like Harry, you know, dates a black woman.
Paul.
Or Paul?
Yeah, the bearded guy, right?
The bearded guy, yeah. Like, he like dates a black woman right. for a while.
Or
and
Lane
it's like,
with the black Playboy bunny.
Right.
Who also played a black Playboy right. bunny in Playboy Club.
And so I think you can make the argument that in the early seasons, they're just trying to like show those things without mm-hmm. delving into it, because I think they're just like saying, but like they're like laying the groundwork to have those deeper discussions.
I think
but you can't say like in the third season they knew there'd be a fifth season either. So,
but okay, so there is a couple things in there, and I mean this comes down to the question of how much do you want to take the author's word for it, because Matthew Weiner has been, I don't know if it's Weiner or Weiner, I always confuse the two. Both ways are fun to say, though. he's said that ever since he mapped out the show, he's wanted seven seasons, where you go from 1960 to 1970.
But there almost wasn't a fifth season, right?
I mean, due to contract negotiations, yes.
Right, so...
But that didn't have anything to do with ratings, didn't have anything to do with the fact that it wasn't planned out, you know.
But, I mean, just think about...
So you're saying, like, just the document of the show could have been...
Yeah.
Just skirting around the issues.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been ultimately what its legacy was.
And you do have to look at the fact that, I mean, it's hard to look at those issues in a way that is fair both in screen time and how much it delves into, because the thing, the refrain that Weiner keeps saying is that this is a story about Madison Avenue advertisers, right? And so in that sense, just like truthfully, historically, beginning in the early 1960s, those people just didn't have to and didn't want to think about how race and inequality plays into their lives, because it just wasn't even on their radar.
Mm.
The more you get towards 1970, the more they have to deal with it. And that meant they dealt with that peripherally with MLK's assassination and with the other things that you mentioned, and now with these protesters, and now the fact that they're being forced basically by their own... I think it's interesting take on the writing of the show that based on the advertiser's own cleverness, they are now in themselves a pickle where they have to hire somebody of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of forces the show to... to show and display how much it was impossible to escape those protests and those issues that were becoming more and more to the surface of the mainstream, just like the smoking thing.
Well, I guess my issue is that you can't look at the show in its entirety yet because it's still on. You know, it's not like going back and revisiting a series that's ended.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, I don't know, I think it's really difficult to not look at scenes or seasons in silos at this point, because only Matthew Weiner Weiner knows what's in his head, you know.
Yeah,
we don't. And that's so true. Especially people that are starting the series, like looking at the first season or the second season, I think that a lot of the critiques about how they've handled their gender discussions or their racial discussions are valid and legitimate, because you don't know, you know, kind of where things are going. I think when we look back at the series as a whole after it's over, you can probably make a better determination about that.
Yeah, I mean, you could. That's the kind of the blissful way to look at a series as like a complete text, not until it's done.
We always talk about Mad Men too as like a slow burn, right?
Oh yeah, totally. And that's one of my, I mean, especially just from the past 24 hours of people's reactions, it's always annoying to me how people react to the beginning of a Mad Men season, like, whoa, what the hell was that? That was boring. And then, like,
right.
it just makes me want to, like, grab those people by their collar and be like, but you're watching the show. You're watching the show because, yes, it's always been quote-unquote boring at the beginning, but it ramps up so, like, effortlessly that and invisibly almost that, like, clearly it got to the point where still 17 months later after the last season ended, you're so excited to watch this show
right.
that you're going to sit down and watch it the night it premieres.
Well, and I know so many people who, specific to this show as opposed to others, have sat down and watched an entire season in a very short period of time, or multiple seasons over the course of like a month or two.
Right.
You know, it definitely is a show that grabs you that way.
It's a testament to, also I think, the thing that David with Simon kind of helped create, and also you could argue to some extent that the people of The Sopranos, where Matthew Weiner also worked, but the viewing of television as a medium more similar to literature than cinema, in that you kind of, I mean, if you look at a season as a novel or an entry in a franchise, instead of you know, its own individual, like each own individual story should be equally as entertaining as the other or equally as plot heavy as the others. And it just doesn't work that way, because you get the more satisfying character moments when you stick with them through thick and thin. Even in like more action heavy shows like Breaking Bad, there's going to be quote unquote boring episodes, but they're so necessary in getting those payoff moments to to feel so good.
Well, that's exactly it, is that they're necessary. They're not they're the quote unquote boring episodes, but they're not filler episodes.
No. And that's the thing, is like, you know, I was still watching the show, and obviously the first time in 17 months, and there was barely anything happening, like no big events, but still every scene completely magnetized and hypnotized me, because these were characters that I had gone so long not spending time with, that just the fact that we're in the same room with them, we're knowing their personalities by their tics and their facial expressions and then their dialogue, it didn't matter if they were talking, like, they didn't matter what they were talking about. If they could be talking about, like, a glass of water on a table, and it would be interesting because you know the histories of these people.
To our listeners, it probably sounds like you need real friends.
Yes.
To hang out with.
Yeah, I probably do. But why couldn't you have friends? Peggy and Pete and Roger.
So what did you think of the first episode of the season?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard for me to dislike an episode of Mad Men, much less not love it.
I'm really interested in, I think this is going to be Joan's season.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in what's going to happen with Joan.
God, the scenes with her and her mom were so intense.
Yeah, and things have been so Peggy heavy the last few seasons, and for you know, good reason. But I think with Joan, you know, having this illegitimate baby with her husband overseas, and her husband like is abusive anyway when he's home. Her returning to work and feeling like she doesn't really know where her place is.
But nobody knows that it's illegitimate, except for her and probably Roger.
Right, right.
I love the moment where Roger comes strolling in with a cigarette in his mouth and says, "Hey, there's my baby."
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I am really excited about how they set the kind of balance between Joan's assertiveness and, like, ambition to succeed at work and in her career with, like, her maternal instincts. Because I think it would have been really easy. They set up, you know, Joan throughout the seasons to kind of be, you know, be vulnerable, but also be, like, kind of the ruthless one in the office.
Right.
And I think it would have been really easy for them to show her, like, struggling with motherhood in a way that, like, she's not maternal or not bonding with her baby. You know what I'm saying?
Right. They do a really good job of balancing that, especially with the third kind of wild card of her mom being there.
Right.
And that's like a whole other stress for her, in addition to her worrying about her job and worrying about being a mom to this baby who's probably not her husband's child.
Yeah.
And
so they, because they do set her up to be very maternal, like not, she's not Betty Draper, you know?
Right.
And she's not a female version of Don either.
And she's not Peggy either, in the sense that, I mean, there's also that wonderful scene in the office. I mean, I think that's probably my favorite scene, the more I talk about it, is when she brings the kid in and you get the reactions from all the people, and that just like re-emphasizes how awesome Joan is, because Peggy doesn't know what to do with the kid, Pete doesn't know what to do with the kid, Roger doesn't know what to do with the kid, Don doesn't know what to do with the kid. Like, she's the only one, she might be like the only like good parent on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm really excited to see where that's going to go when she comes back to work.
Yeah.
My favorite character of the first episode is a one-time character, I'm guessing.
Yes.
but what's his name? Who wrote the great novel?
Wait, what?
Isn't it that guy?
Oh, Cosgrove?
Isn't it him?
No, you're talking about Stan's cousin, right?
Who's Stan?
The burly guy.
His cousin, the sailor.
Yeah, the sailor.
Who gets roped into attending Don Draper's surprise 40th birthday party and is, like, so out of place.
This is the other thing I want to mention earlier.
And hilarious.
How good this show is at comedy when it wants to be.
Yeah.
And that's also makes it very versatile and kind of like a signature move, in that it can be so darkly comic, but not in a way that is, like, awkward comedy, because that isn't what this show thrives on, like so many other dramas do. And it also doesn't thrive on, like, the wacky comedy combined with the drama, like so many network shows do. Like, I think Pan Am tried to do, and Playboy Club to a certain extent. They have, like, a very dark comic tinge to them that is also very just, like, gut-bustingly hilarious.
They're good at infusing the comedy at particular points where otherwise the scene is like kind of stark.
Right.
You know, like in the first episode where this sailor character is totally out of place and starts off by saying like, oh man, I thought there'd be girls here or whatever. Right. And then at the end when things get like the most awkward after the new Mrs. Draper does her like weird burlesque dance and things are just like silent and awkward, you know, he at that moment decides to like raise his glass and be like, happy birthday.
Yeah, but you mentioned the word awkward, and I mean it is awkward to a certain extent, but I think what is that so many shows would like milk that kind of moment and just let there be more silence, but instead they like, without missing a beat, Don just keeps talking as if this guy doesn't even exist.
Yeah,
and that I think is what separates them from using comedy in traditional ways, either in a drama or sitcom setting.
I feel like we should talk a little bit about the relationship between the new Mr. and Mrs. Draper.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the centerpiece of the show. And I think this is also why I said, if anything, the women had more of a spotlight in this season premiere than any other, because I think we did get some kind of important Don moments, but this was like Megan's episode, and which is kind of bold for them to do since we only met her like a few episodes before the end of season four.
Well, I think it's especially interesting to see their relationship right next to Roger and Jane.
Yes,
because that was such a huge part of season four, right? Was Roger leaving his wife and marrying Jane, and her leaving the office as soon as she gets engaged, and now you have, you know, Megan and Don working together,
right,
as newlyweds. It's that just was very an strange.
Awesome line of him saying, "Why don't you sing like that?" and her saying, "Why do you look like him?"
Yeah,
because they're I mean, it's once again, it's dark because they're clearly depressed and it's
hate each other.
But and yet, you know, they're supposed to be like the what's it called, May December romance that supposed to like reignite Roger's life, but he's also got his own issues going at work. I think probably Roger's my favorite character now, which is interesting.
The Silver Fox.
Yeah, because you're talking about Joan, and and clearly their past is going to have to reconnect at some point, if only in a subtle way.
The scene that I was like really conflicted about is the scene where Don comes back to their apartment after Megan comes home from work upset. She's upset because Don didn't like his surprise party.
Yep.
And she starts cleaning up in her underwear.
Right.
And
that scene, even though I typically feel kind of icky around those kinds of scenes where it's characters talking around what they want and then just kind of getting it on in an aggressive way.
Yeah.
I feel like we've seen that before, but they do it in a way that kind of finally made me like Megan in a way. And not even in an attractive way, because I don't really find her attractive. But
it's the teeth.
Yeah, the teeth is a little much for me. But the fact that she's so, like, I feel like Don's finally met his match. Like, probably the reason why she isn't weird when she's talking about, like, she's kind of laughing off the things about him being Dick Whitman and his past and stuff, because she kind of knows how to be that kind of manipulative and create a new identity and be the actress that she wants to be when she needs to, is that clearly she does that not because she's doesn't want to sweat, or because she just throws her robe off in frustration, but clearly she wants to get that exact reaction from Don.
Right.
And can control him in many ways that Don could never imagine him being able to control her.
Well, and I think the power dynamic is interesting, and I think that scene told a lot about like their relationship and where things are going. What I get conflicted about is seeing, you know, scenes depicted anywhere where it's like something sexual that starts out like semi non-consensual and then like,
but I think
that's why I'm conflicted about it, so let me explain. So because I think that that's like a very typical scene that you see and I find to be really disturbing in other places. It's actually, like
that very kind of scene is one that has also almost cost us a relationship at one point after going to the movies.
Yes, because I was so upset that you liked a movie that featured a scene like that I like couldn't get past it. But you know, a scene where it starts out like, oh, you want it, no I don't, and then like, you know, it looks like it's going to be rape, and then basically it's like, oh, just kidding, now I'm into it, you know?
But the big difference, sorry, you can finish.
But I think you know where I'm going with this, because that's why I'm conflicted about it, because this scene is a lot different, because it felt like she was sort of like conducting this whole thing, right? So she's the one in control of the situation, and she's like the puppet master in the situation. And like when he initially sort of like tackles her to the ground, like it obviously is consensual right away, because like her, you know, she like embraces him and whatever. But I'm still conflicted by any scene on TV where somebody's like, oh, you want sex? No, I don't. And then like physically, mm-hmm. they physically take someone over.
Do you think
it's really difficult because I feel like I can read that and I understand where they're going with it, but just by showing that on television, I don't think everybody reads that critically.
You think it could be misconstrued easily? Yeah. Okay. I can see that. I don't know. I feel like that's a tricky argument to have because clearly there are people that probably read it that way. But at the same time, that's like disallowing the show to be as smart as it is. By saying like that kind of, because I mean clearly the part of the point of that scene is to make us feel uncomfortable, and whether or not we interpret it one way versus another.
I'm uncomfortable by every sex scene with Don Draper.
That's fair. Yeah, you're one of the only women in the world that doesn't think John Hamm's attractive.
He's hairy and he has a weird chin, and he does weird things with that chin when he's like in like acting like postcoital. It's disturbing.
All right, fair enough. Regardless, though, I think that, I mean, what I'd be interested from your perspective, having those mixed feelings about that scene. Mm-hmm. Do you end up with a kind of respect for Megan like I did by the end of the episode? Because I totally like disliked her character at the end of season 4, which I think we were supposed to. But it was amazing that I think over the course of 2 hours that all of a sudden I'm like, she actually has potential not only as a character but as a kind of a secret rival for Don.
Yeah, I'm kind of undecided about her and kind of where things are going, particularly when I watch how their relationship is playing out in the office setting.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating.
So I'm going to reserve my judgment on that for a couple more episodes.
I also think it's very interesting. This kind of ends up dominating conversation, and we miss part of the episode at the beginning, but every time you try to guess how much further in time have we gone since the time the last season ended? And it turns out it's been a little over 9 months. We're now in 1966, Memorial Day weekend. And so we don't actually see Don and Megan's wedding.
No.
Which is an interesting choice because it kind of forces us just straight into kind of the throes of their honeymoon phase of their marriage, especially because they got engaged on such a whim.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Joan's baby. I mean, we don't see her pregnant at all in the office. The only time we see her in the office is after she now has this baby and she's worried about mm-hmm. her position and her authority there.
No Betty.
Yes.
In the first episode.
Which I think was a cool choice.
Yeah.
Because not only does it make us focus on Don and Megan, but you're constantly thinking about her in the background, especially because we see their house, which is like this huge mansion mm-hmm. now.
Well, they talk about her.
Right.
You know, like Megan says, oh, Betty never threw you a birthday party.
And Don calls her Morticia.
yeah. And you see the kids who have grown, and it seems like they have a good relationship
with
Megan. Like, it seems like they get along anyway.
There's like one little glance where you wonder, like, is Sally starting to change her mind now that she's her stepmom and not just the babysitter?
You're talking about when she's in the bed?
Yeah.
See, and I think that's more laying the groundwork for Sally, like, coming of age and, like...
Oh, yeah. I think it has to be combined, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Because you're coming of age at a point in which, you know, you switch from thinking about babysitter, cool person to hang out with, versus this is now the person...
See, and I guess I was seeing it as, like, a nod to like her like blooming sexual curiosity.
Oh.
Because they've kind of hinted at that in previous seasons, right? So she with Glenn, and then I think wasn't she like masturbating or something?
Yep,
and like
that's right.
Betty ended up taking her to therapy for that or whatever. So I kind of thought that as like, you know, now her new stepmom is like sleeping naked in bed. Like they obviously I don't know. To me that was just like,
well, that's got to be, I mean, it's got to be a whole bunch of confusion.
Yeah. But I think that'll get really interesting as Sally hits adolescence.
And I think we're in the minority in that we actually are interested to see how Betty's doing.
Really?
Yeah.
People
are way Betty haters.
And really?
And just like wish that she'd get killed off or something.
No. I think it's great.
I think it's especially great now compare it, seeing that side by side with Don and Megan's relationship, especially since the last time we checked in with Betty, I think, I mean, she was kind of analogous to the way Roger and Jane are right now, mm-hmm. with her and Henry, because they clearly, the magic is gone and they're just kind of, they feel stuck now. But the fact that Don is starting to get so, starting to feel like the beginnings of those getting stuck with Megan, is how is he going to react like that to Betty? Because obviously he still has to see her to trade custody with the kids and what have you.
Yeah. No, I'm excited to see where it's going to go. Yeah. But we can't have this be a Mad Men episode. We need to...
We could talk about it forever.
We need to move on.
Let's spend the last part just talking about the reality shows that we've been...
Okay.
Kind of obsessively watching, even though I feel so vacant and just kind of...
Do you?
Dumb while I watch them in comparison, especially now that we just talked about Mad Men, in which I was so, like... intellectually involved in.
The thing I like about watching reality shows with you, though, is that we get to be super snarky with each other about it all the way through. Like, I feel like with other shows that I legitimately enjoy reality shows. I don't know that it's, like, yeah, totally it's ironic. Really.
We gotta get past that.
But, do you not understand what I'm saying, though? Like, I feel like I pay attention to the dialogue and, like, what's being said on sitcoms and dramas that we watch. Mm. But with reality shows, it's kind of just, like, this interactive, like... give me fodder to be snarky about.
Right. And so, it is, I mean, it is nice to be able to turn your head off for a second and
yeah,
just take in this
and kind turn of on your voice. Am I right? This
repetitive crap. Yes. So the voice is clearly the one we're most invested in.
So invested.
Season 2 began, I guess, like 2 months ago now. So it's been almost 2 months ago.
It took us a while to catch up.
Yes. And they just finished up the battle rounds tonight.
Yes.
And so now we have a top 24, but let's just, so we're not just rambling, let's talk about what they've done better this year versus last year.
Oh, the battle rounds are 1,000 times better.
Clearly.
Because they had no idea, like, they thought that was, like, a cute concept last year. Like, we'll put them in what looks like a wrestling ring, and they can try to out-sing each other. But then it literally was just them, like, out-singing each other, and it was horrible.
Right. And the thing that I'd realized tonight as they were kind of showing more of the behind-the-scenes stuff of preparing the contestants for the battle rounds is that, I don't know, maybe I'd have to go back and check to make sure, but I don't think they ever discussed harmonizing with those contestants in season one.
Right.
They were just like, you sing this part, you sing this part, let's see what happens.
Right.
But they actually are making sure that, you know, they're harmonizing so that it doesn't sound like two people literally out-singing each other. Mm. Which is nice, but... there was something to be said for the fact that I think we largely end up watching that show because of how ridiculously bad and haphazardly put together the show was last year.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, because last year there was like a charm to it where it was like, we don't know how this is going to work and we're making up the rules as we go along.
Right.
And they kind of smartened that up a little bit. But I think that's allowed other parts to get more ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about a lot last year about the Joaches. And, you know, how they interact with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, trying to out-pervert each other.
Yes.
Their daddy issues.
That's not anything different.
No. but they've gotten a little bit more intense, I think, that way. Like...
True.
Blake Shelton has gotten more and more predatory.
Yeah. There must have been some kind of candid conversation with the producers where they're just like, you know what, guys? Don't hold back. Just be yourselves, whether that's creepy, oppressive,
cartoon shark like
yeah,
whatever it is.
Yes, he's super creepy. He's by far the creepiest man on television right now, possibly of all time.
He likened one of the 17-year-old contestants to like a young version of his wife.
So, and then later made sure that they were in the same room together so that he could jerk off behind the piano.
It was all kinds of wrong. Also, CeeLo has that cat now for some reason.
Yes, love it.
Like he's Dr. Claw,
right,
on Inspector Gadget. So that's pretty awesome.
Uh-huh.
Carson Daly is trying more and more to be involved. He's like just running behind everybody being like, wait for me, guys. Guys, I'm on the show too.
He wants to be a part of it so bad. He's like trying to hold people's hands while they're waiting to hear the results. But like the people like don't want to hold hands with him because
yeah,
obvious reasons.
Because he's Carson Daly. They don't want his mojo rubbing off on them.
Yeah, he's so wooden and cardboard that it's very, it's the nice thing about that is it's very easy to ignore him and his announcements and his attempts to be a part of the show.
Yeah, sometimes he tries to give critique, like, oh, that was really...
That was a tough one, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, Grandpa.
Like, no one cares. Yeah. No one cares, Carson Daly.
The other thing I think they have improved upon is that they're actually giving opinions now. The first season really suffered from them just trying to be as nice as possible, which was super annoying and grating, especially based on the fact that a lot of the singers either didn't sing well or that they were trying to out-sing one another, etc. But I did like during these battle rounds that they weren't afraid to, A, pick a winner, even if they aren't the one deciding the winner, and B, like, we got some nice reactions, especially tonight, people being like, that performance didn't do much for me, guys. Whereas last year, they'd be like, that was so magical.
I'm so proud of you both, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there were a couple performances where the Joach was just like, nope, that really sucked all around.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in you guys. But then the
it was
thing
better is, in rehearsal.
They're never, like, obscenely cruel about it like Simon Cowell.
No.
Which I appreciate, but they still can at least let their opinions be known. Do we have any singers that we like?
Nah, not particularly.
That's not really why we watch the show, huh?
I like Moses Stone.
Right. I think he's a clear fan favorite.
But I think only because they've never had a rapper on the show, so yeah, it's kind of fun to have a rapper.
First MC. And we were really worried because they gave him the assignment of Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones, and we're like, what? They're not going to let the rapper rap? But then he was able to throw in a verse and kind of add some lyrics to make some Mick Jagger's words turn into a rap of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. So that was enjoyable.
But conversely, the girl that wanted to be the country singer playing piano, which I thought was a fine way to market yourself. That would work fine. But then Adam Levine just starts pushing the piano out of the way and be like, no, don't let this control you. Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, no piano. And then she just, they struck her down as being like too generic of a voice.
Right.
Which I guess that's been frustrating for me this season is because of, I think largely because of how well What's-Her-Face did last year. Dia.
Yeah, the weird voice girl.
And Xenia.
And Xenia.
Xenia.
Which is interesting because they were second and third place.
Right, but I think largely because of their success, right, that this year has been all about not who has, like, a good voice, but who has the most indie-sounding voice. Right. Like, who sounds the weirdest?
They specifically keep using the word indie to describe any of the singers that... It's not just if they have a weird voice. That's not enough for them to call them indie. They have to have a weird voice and a strange haircut or some kind of weird mode of dress or something like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit grating.
They really want it to be as distinctive as possible. Which,
but then they also keep talking about versatility and how they need to keep people on their teams that are the most versatile.
Right.
But then it's like you get somebody who's just like
sings like somewhere between Bjork and a dolphin.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a dolphin and Bjork.
But I mean, I personally enjoy that. I'd rather hear that than the versatile big generic singers.
Yeah, but there's some good ones. I mean, like there's like an opera singer on this year, which is enjoyable, and you've got like soul singers. Right?
Soul singers are always good.
And you've got, like... Yeah, but, I mean, they're big voices, and, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I hope that some of those, like, stick around for a while so it just doesn't become, like, an Adele-off at the end.
Contest who can be the strangest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. The thing that at this point, we were kind of wondering, like, what's after the battle rounds? Like, well, that's when it just kind of becomes American Idol Redux.
Right.
And so we have live shows starting next week, and they'll just basically be singing and people be voting for their favorites. And that's where it kind of stops losing some of its charm. Though, unfortunately, I feel like we're invested by this point that we're going to continue on.
Well, and there's some fun episodes coming up, which up the creep factor, like when they inevitably invite... Like, all of the Joach will invite all of the team over to, like, their house.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to seeing Blake Shelton's, like, sex dungeon.
Well, isn't that where they were? They did do that differently for the battle rounds this time, where they'd practice. Didn't they practice at Blake's farm or ranch or whatever?
Yeah, they're in different places, but I mean, not so much the intimate setting that I'm expecting weird crap.
Oh, like
to go
when
down.
They have them to dinner at the same table.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So we've got some things to look forward to.
That's true. And the nice thing with The Voice is that they don't just have the singer on the stage. They always have some, and it's usually horrible, but at least entertainingly so, some kind of weird, like, stage production involving costumes.
Yes.
And or lights and or PowerPoint slides.
That's true, yeah. And they, we haven't seen, I think we've seen one. But we'll see more performances of all the Joaches together.
Yeah. Oh,
performing music, which is ridiculous.
Be horrible, as usual. Yeah, they did that Prince medley this year.
And then it's like Adam Levine and Blake Shelton like compete to see who can make the most like phallic references during their like erratic dancing.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah. The other show we've been watching, this one even more reluctantly so, Fashion Star.
I don't even know how that happened. It was like on in the background.
NBC's Fashion Star is they're basically network Project Runway spin-off, rip-off, but its new gimmick is that the fashion designers get to present their clothing to buyers from Saks Fifth Avenue, Macy's, and H&M.
Who then decide whether or not to buy them on the spot.
Right.
And so, you know, Chris and I are known for being fashionistas, right? So
I'm wearing Charlie Brown Happy Holidays pajama pants.
yep, and I'm still pregnant.
Maybe maternity wear will be a theme week soon.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
They say really annoying things like bohemian looks and bat sleeves.
I think actually,
like that's
yeah, bat sleeves.
That's an attractive feature.
And the hilarious, well, the thing I think that I got hooked on was the ending of the premiere, in which they had like a 5-minute discussion about sexism and motorcycle jackets.
And what? I missed that.
Did you miss this?
Yeah.
This Australian guy designed motorcycle jackets and he was up for elimination. And Jessica Simpson.
Oh, yes. No, I remember that. That was the first episode. Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah.
She was trying to explain what was boring about his motorcycle jackets because they're motorcycle jackets. How much can you do with them? He just put zippers in weird places. and he, like, cockily said, excuse me, I just don't think you know a lot about men's fashion. And then, like, Jessica Simpson and Nicole Richie, like, blew him a new one.
Not that! Ripped him a new one?
That's the idiom I'm looking for. Some Freudian things going on, I think.
Because we talked about sexual violence earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, I like the candor of this show. Obviously, it's a little similar to our podcast in that you'd never expect kind of these random conversations to happen when people are presenting jackets to a crowd.
We also have
department stores.
We also have representatives of major industry that sit in our living room and provide us offers on the spot. Yeah.
They're the biggest names in podcasting sitting across from us right now, and they're giving us some horrible looks. I don't know how much I'll keep on with Fashion Star. If it happens to be on in the background, then who knows? But
you realize that we control the remote.
But though, here's the thing. You put it on demand. And because you were looking for something that you wouldn't care about that I was missing because I was doing something upstairs. And then I come downstairs and I'm like, what are you watching? And you're like, I don't know, I just picked something that you weren't going to watch. And so you were doing something on the computer, you were barely watching it too. And then all of a sudden I sit down and like three times you have to mention to me, the remote's right there, Chris. The remote's right there, Chris. The remote's right there, Chris. And yet,
we're watching it. Was. Yep.
So, you've got a nice spectrum of topics from the high class and academic to the completely idiotic and vacant.
And we love them all.
We do.
Equally.
From best to worst. Thanks for listening to Bloggy Data Radio this week. My name is Chris.
And I'm Jerxica.
And you can catch us every week, either us or Qualler and Bridget or some new variation of the Blogulator crew at fancypantsgangsters.com. You can find other written diatribes at theblogulator.com. April 9th is coming up. We've got a relaunch in which we'll be reposting a lot of TV writings from both us and some new writers as well. They'll be more consistent than what you've seen lately. And we should also mention about our sponsor, as we do always. We talked about The Walking Dead. The first season of Walking Dead is available on Netflix, as is, I think, season 1 of The Voice. So you can check that via bit.ly/blogflix. That's a special link that gets you a 2-week free trial courtesy of Blogulator Radio and the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. You can find us on Twitter at the Blogulator, as well as Blogulator Radio, and Facebook keyword Blogulator. Thank you for listening. We'll check you back next week. And as always, please remember that
our opinions are valid. Zoo.